CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, brand new guest, awesome sauce person. I don't know why I did it like that. Reed McArdle. It's a weird way of introducing somebody, say awesome sauce person.
I'm flattered.
It's beautiful. Do you have any, before we get into any sort of real content, real meat of the interview kind of thing, do you have any weird phrases that you say that you realize? You're like, awesome sauce is one of mine. I don't know where the hell I got
it. So many, it's hard to know where to begin. I mean, I've been accused of overuse of the word glorious, certainly. That's not all that weird. I'm also obsessed with the word Israelites.
That's a unique one. That's a very biblical thing to have. Israelites. Right? It's like that's up there with like Gentile and
yeah. You know, and I don't know why. I mean, I've never looked at my own blueprints. I don't know why I say these things.
That's a unique one. I've never heard anyone's like, I'm obsessed with the word Israelites. Like that's
same with Narnia. I use it sort of as an exclamation or a sigh. Narnia. You know. So there's these things.
Oh, hold on. Okay, Reed.
Why do they have it? It's anyone's guess.
Have you ever in anger, either in something, either you stubbed your toe, maybe you died in a video game too many times, have you ever screamed Narnia just at the top?
I'm almost positive I have. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's taking place at least.
I'm just laughing at just the audacity of like a grown man just screaming Narnia, not like fuck shit or any other potential words that it Narnia, because it's like don't get me wrong, there are certain words I would love that were back in style, like sort of like quote unquote obscene words. Love to come back in, like there's two I'd love to come back in style. Poppycock and Balderdash.
Oh, that's a good one.
Balderdash, I would love to come back in style. I would so love to just stream Balderdash, like just with a bowler hat on and just be ready to be like the fucking like baron, the oil baron of like the 1920s, just be like Balderdash.
You strike me as my whiskey oil baron type.
My dream, Reed. My dream is to be a 1920s oil baron.
May it come true.
So for those who are curious who the heck this guy is and why the heck we're meeting, this is actually between due to a mutual friend, Chris. We'll just say Chris because I think
we love you, Chris.
Yeah. And Chris had mentioned to him, a fan of the show, a friend of the show, I mentioned him about this podcast and whatnot, and he goes, okay, well, you got to talk to this guy. I go, okay, cool. Well, I trust Chris's opinion and everything else. So I start looking into it and everything else. Thank God. This huge dock of stuff. And it comes to my sort of purview that you're like this multi-talented guy. Like you're a singer, musician, you're a podcaster, and you do this. So we're going to probably go into this, we're almost going to kind of go free flow. But there's one thing I do want to talk about because we probably should just open up. Is it Foosh? Fuchs. It's a very, it rolls off the tongue, except it kind of just sort of whoosh.
Yeah, it sort of dives. It's like an onomatopoeia, It's like people often spell it P-H-E-W-S-H. But it's like people often say it after a near miss, fuchs, like that kind of thing. It's just a misspelling of that.
Really. Is that the tagline? It just dies off the tongue. Just
it should be. maybe I need to look into that.
Dies off the tongue. No, I'm kidding. No, because it's interesting because I was, whenever I look into guests and new people, whatever, I do my best to do as much research as I can, try to get an idea of who this is before I get them on the show. And I start looking at the podcast Fuchs, which is safe to say it's a music show sort of thing where you go about sort of make a weird playlist type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I like to refer to it as a program of music and musings, because it's also, I mean, it's mostly music, but, you know, the show begins with a, you know, a pointless meandering monologue, and I'll tell a story in the middle of this show, you know, so it's music and musings, but it's mostly music.
Right.
I think that's safe to say.
No, yeah. I think that's sort of what, and it's funny because I started thinking about how I've done at least one music show or program
in
the past.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about just all that stuff. And that's usually what I had to sort of do, because I started doing like, well, let me pick these songs, but what do I do in between each song? I'm like, well, let me just, let me tell a story of it. And then, you know, I've done producer things as well. But the thing that kicked me and sort of got into the purview was like, okay, well, let me look at what this looks like. And I click one episode and I just see this. I almost like somebody looked at my music collection and said, well,
really?
But more of the idea of that someone went and said, because I think about this and I've thought about this ever since I thought about doing like music programs and stuff like that. And it's the idea, I take it back. This is an idea from a friend of mine, my friend Sammy back in college, where his mission was to try to make the perfect mix CD. Where you don't skip a track, where you just put on play and you let it go. And it was never and it was never like, oh, all punk music or all electronica, like, because of him, is like, that's why I got into New Order, that's why I got into Flux Pink Indians, that's why I got into all these other weird things. And he'd always have this like very eclectic collection of music, and you'd go like, wow, this is weird, wow, this is interesting, who's this? And you start to ask him all these questions. And so I look at the playlist that are on there, and it's like, this is a smattering of music. You know, like there's the Ink Spots, there's Bjork, there's kind of some singer songwriter stuff. It's like, that's an interesting way of approaching it. So I guess I got to ask, just because I'm really curious, how did you get into doing like a music type show? Like, especially, you know, because typically people do more talk than anything else, 'cause it's easy. Music's always hard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a great question.
It's like, I've never thought about why I did what I do. I just did it. Okay.
Exactly.
Someone said, make a music show. And I went to my iTunes collection I grabbed every song I could and said, boom, there it is. And that's the beginning of you.
Well, I mean, it's interesting though. I mean, it's probably the same birth as your friends. I mean, I used to make mixtapes when I was a kid. And I wasn't all, you know, the exciting thing to me wasn't just like putting all the best songs I could on them. I love the transitions between songs. You know, I love when a song's end supports the beginning of the next song. And I also love tracks that many people perceive as pointless, you know, like a tiny little interlude, a little spoken tidbit, a secret track. You know, I love all sorts of stuff, you know, and there's not a genre of music I don't love. So not only do I love music in a way that many, many, many people do,
well,
but I love,
it's funny,
you know, it's
everything
funny
to bring
I love
up the whole, like the pointless track. 'Cause I started thinking in my head, like, what is one of my all time favorite songs is just a 2-word song, and it's by They Might Be Giants. And I still think it is the greatest They Might Be Giants song ever written.
Oh my gosh. Are you talking about Minimum Wage?
Yes.
Of course you are.
Of course
because
I am.
It's a masterwork.
It's the magnum opus of They Might Be Giants off of one of their best albums, Flood.
Absolutely.
And as a kid, you know, I got that because of Particle Man and, you know, the cover of Istanbul by Constantinople. And then you start listening to everything else, Your Racist Friend and anything else. And then you hear this weird song. It's like, Minimum Wage. It's like the crack of the whip. And like, that's the song. And it's just like, it's an amazing song. And it's one of those things where like, I want to be brave enough. I want to be brave enough one day to be like a boss and like be like the owner of like a fast food restaurant or something like that. And like the employee comes and they're like, oh, cool. Well, how much do I get paid? And I put that song on and just like just smile and nod, go like point to the record player. Just like,
I want that reality to take place. That's amazing.
Well, because it's like such an amazing song. It's just this like,
it is.
It's like it's this epic buildup in like the first minute, and it's just like, that's it. What does this mean?
And then it just closes.
Yeah. And it's like, because it's like this Western. Well, because it's a song you'd imagine like right before you watch like an epic Western movie, and it's just like, Why is this here? What is this? Who had this idea? Where did? Yeah. What is the? Where is the back? Like, it's the only song.
And thank God they had that idea. Oh, yeah,
I want like the only They Might Be Giants song that I'd love to know the backstory behind, because there has to be like a deep backstory. Yeah. Like,
indeed.
That. Yeah. But that's what I thought about. When I started seeing this thing. I was like, this is a weird mixture of music. And so, okay, so began sort of making playlists, and then you just kind of just put it online, or
So I worked at a Whole Foods in Michigan in whatever the hell year that was. And I started meeting these people. You know, I have a love of music. I have a love of organizing music. I have a love of words. So it's sort of like everything is there to love radio, but I was clueless about it. And, so numerous people that I met at that Whole Foods were DJs at a local, you know, college station. So I got in a band with all of them. So we were all DJs. We were all in this band. So anyway, I'm jumping chapters. So they got me into this radio gig, and I did a show there called Condiments, you know, as in mayonnaise, ketchup, you know, horseradish.
Right.
And it was a similar show in some ways to Fuge. You know, it was just like a garbage disposal music and words show, you know. And I only did that for a year, and you know, some years passed and I missed it like crazy. And then when G-Town Radio was being founded, a buddy of mine heard about it and pointed me in the direction of it. And that was 10 years ago. And I just, you know, that's probably not the best explanation, Roberto, but yeah.
No. I mean, that's usually how those things begin, is just you kind of just get thrown into it.
Yeah,
you kind of find your way into that, especially when it comes to, like, radio. Yeah. Like, radio, I've always... No.
As you well know, yeah.
Right, exactly. You just kind of kind of lump into it somehow, which is, I guess, the best way to explain radio is any good show.
I bet you have. You were telling me that. I mean, it's sort of a similar organic story for you in the show.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I think that's how these things begin. Is that you kind of go organically to stuff and you get there. But I may do broadcast, and that's easy to do, but you also do music as well, and I think that's where the meat of our discussion is going to be, just because I know, you know, for those who do not know, currently Reed is working on crowdfunding a new album, sort of his next sort of thing. But even that being said, you know, listening back kind of things, it's, you know, if you're kind of unfamiliar with the style and everything else, it's sort of, it's almost like singer-songwriter in an interesting way. Like, it's like you, guitarist, maybe sometimes like a backing band, depending.
Yeah, well, often when it comes to recordings, yes and no. I like to call my, you know, are you familiar with Michael Hurley? Does that ring a bell?
It does not, but you can.
He's great. Okay. I recommend him to anybody, but he referred to his music as freak folk. And that's how I like to refer to my music, you know, because it's like, it kind of sums it up, you know, it's like bizarre lyrics, often morbid, sometimes erotic.
That's an interesting way of doing it.
You know,
it's weird. You bring up the, like, folk, and folk is like that weird genre. That as of late, when I say this as like, because like folk is that weird genre that if you talk to certain people, like there's, I always forget there's the fantasy folk. I think it's like filk. I think that's what's called.
I haven't heard of that. That's amazing.
Yeah. There's a lot of like, folk is this like weird shubs like genre that if you get to the nerdy parts of it, gets strange and cool. Like you have people doing like Firefly folk and like science fiction folk and things like that.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of freak folk. I never would have thought that. And it's because it's folk is that genre that I guess I should ask you, how do you tend to approach then performing folk? Because folk again means you know, anything we talk about in terms of science fiction stuff we brought up, but even like people might think of things like Allison's Restaurant
and I love both of those guys.
I do too. That's what I'm just saying. Like, that's why like my brain was like immediately goes to those two artists for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so easy. I think it's so easy for anybody that makes any art of any sort to get precious about their genre, you know, and feel guarded about using a genre. You know what I mean? But I think it makes sense because I think anybody, yourself very much included, Roberto, it's like no genre cuts the mustard. You know what I mean? Like,
No. You honestly have to get to the point with music. And if you kind of want to I was like, recently here in Austin, we had ACL, Austin City Limits, and it's a cavalcade of different genres, different music.
So wonderful
like
thing. That.
Amazing event. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of thing, like I was talking to my cousin, because she was like a first time going, where the beauty part of those sort of festivals is that you kind of hear something in the distance. You go, that sounds kind of cool. That sounds interesting. That sounds interesting. And usually it's something different. And as you kind of go on in life, the way you should approach music, I think at least, is being ready to go out of your comfort zone and using that to find a new thing. And that new thing may not be something that you thought you'd like. Like right now, I'm in this sort of recent like hip hop sort of thing. I have a lot of friends who do a lot of nerdcore hip hop. And that's kind of been my
wonderful.
Yeah. And so that's been my sort of intro into hip hop music, to the point where I was at a concert where a friend of mine was playing, and the headliner was MC Chris. And it was weird because he started playing. I started doing kind of these call responses sort of things like that, and look around the audience and no one's doing any of this. And I kind of looked strange. And it occurred to me right then and there that every time I'd ever saw my friend perform, even though he's a nerdcore artist, even though he's a very geeky person, it's actually been a hip hop concert without me realizing it's been a hip hop concert. And I was doing all the things you would do at a hip hop concert, like turning it up and that. And it was like, oh shit, I've been at a hip hop concert this whole time. And it was that like moment of like, oh shit, I'm not at a hip hop concert right now. I'm at a geeky thing. Okay, that's cool.
Oh,
it was
fascinating.
It was a weird way of sort of realizing that. But you can't, when it comes to genres, you have to almost accept that there's going to be, I guess I should ask, especially since you're doing kind of the freak folk, is there times when you're doing that people that go more traditional folk look at it kind of strangely and weirdly, or do they seem more open?
Yeah. Like, case in point, I was at a songwriter's retreat once in upstate New York, which was just great. I was the youngest guy there, just these amazing folk musicians from all over the place. And I played this song called Give Me a Second. It's a tune of mine. And it's told from the perspective of sort of a budding serial killer, you know, who's sort of been following a woman. And his whole point is, like, his justification about why he's considering taking her life and making curtains out of her skin is that he's just like, if you'd just given me a second the other day to sort of collect my thoughts, none of this would be happening. So it's a depraved song, and it's told from the perspective of a serial killer. And people treated me very different for the rest of the weekend after I played that song. You know,
I wonder, and this is something that maybe that folk kind of has as a genre. Maybe this is where it comes from, because I started thinking about that, like, hearing you describe that. Like, I mean, that's no different than, like, you know, fucking the Misfits or even like, you know, any really deep, you know, heavy you know, death metal band. Not because they're that morbid, but because that's just the genre, and that's just, you know, like Cannibal Corpse is always a band I think of as is like over
just
the top.
About Cannibal Corpse.
Right, it's just the over the top kind of thing. When you realize, oh, it's over the top, be over the top. Okay, cool. That's why you
and
have
you
tickets.
You've got to love them for it.
Right. Well, it's like war and like all these kind of crazy things, you know. And it's those sorts of music where I'm like, that's more accepting. But I wonder, like, is it because folk is perceived, and whether or not it truly is doesn't fucking matter. But it's perceived to be this more honest music, even though it's not. Not saying it's not talented. That's sort of the thing about music. Everyone that does music is talented, but it's no more or less honest than any other genre. Does that make sense?
I totally agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I think it's I mean, I feel like anybody in any genre automatically gets pigeonholed. You know what I mean? Like, so genres are just by nature such limited things. I mean, in the album I released a couple of years ago, there's elements of metal, there's elements of jazz, there's elements of electropop. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on there, and that doesn't make me unique. That's true for tons of artists. You know what I mean?
Oh God, so, no. I talk to other artists, and I'm going to ask you probably the same thing. Is that there's usually when it comes to the music that inspires them to go into music, it's always this like collection of things. I have friends who are, like I said, were hip hop producers, and it's like, I listen to Steely Dan, I listen to this,
I
do too. Well, please, honestly, one of the vinyls I have Playing Anytime is Asia. Just because,
I love that album so much.
I think everyone does. I don't think there's a Steely Dan fan out there that doesn't love Asia. And if that's the case, it's a weird album not to like out of Steely Dan's collection. Like,
quick side note: Home at Last is one of my favorite songs across the fucking board.
You know, I was gonna say the exact same thing. Ironically, Home at Last is like my favorite. Well, it's one of my favorite tracks off that album. It's that and the title song Asia off that album. I love Deacon Blues and everything off that album, but like Home at Last is that weird song where I will play it. And I've played it very much in the car as I'm driving, just like, you know, that do-do-do, and just like the drum, like whoever they got for the I have to look at exactly who they got for that what session artist they got for that song, because I've been curious.
You mean playing which instrument?
Drum specifically. I've always
been Jim Keltner. Maybe?
Okay, because I know that was during the era of like the session musicians and like the Wrecking Crew type thing, and I've always been kind of curious.
I think it's Jim Keltner.
I'll look it up. I'll check it out because not to go too off the rails with this, but like the one thing I love about that era of music, and it's one of my favorite things if you know this fact, is that the lead singer from Doobie Brothers just appears randomly in like Steely Dan stuff.
Peg.
It's like
Michael McDonald.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what the fuck is he? I really want to know. I so want to know, like, how often do you think like that guy was just at the studio, just hanging out, and someone's like,
"Hi guys, I can do something,"
because he was on every fucking backing track. He was on like Christopher. He was on like Cross's shit, and like, you know, like Sailing. Not Sailing.
I didn't know that.
He was on. He was the backing on. I think it was like Ride Like the Wind. He's like, such a long way to go. Like, if you hear that song, you're like, oh shit, that's him. And then
that was a fine impression, by the way.
The Doobie Brothers is still the most fascinating band, and it's the band I say
they are interesting.
Well, when I say fascinating, it's that like when you talk about, you know, band lead guys and how stuff, because we can say it now with like Dave Grohl's a prime example of that, because Dave Grohl Nirvana is light years different from Dave Grohl Foo Fighters, and that's totally awesome because they're both amazing for their own right.
But you take
Doobie Brothers early stuff like Alabama Getaway and like, you know, Listen to the Music and even Long Train Running, and then you compare it to What a Fool Believes, and you realize that's the same band with a different front guy, and you're like, what happened here? Where did that? Because it's light years different. It's amazing. It's super cool.
Totally. There's a bunch of bands like that. I was dorking out with a friend of mine about that recently, like Foreigner.
Yes.
Same with the Cars. Like, there's some Cars singles. It's like, is that the Cars? Is that actually? Are we sure that's the Cars? You know.
Well, because the only other artist like I can think of that also has that weird shift. Another really good example is Genesis. Just because, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's the Peter Gabriel Genesis, and then there's what people typically people associate as Genesis being the Phil Collins era. That's really all people remember. Mm-hmm. Not saying that Peter Gabriel's not well known. Peter Gabriel, I think, no offense to Genesis, but I think that was holding Peter Gabriel back.
Full agreement.
You know, you go Salisbury Hill, you then have, you know, Big Time, and then of course Sledgehammer, and you're like, oh, this is Peter Gabriel.
And that's
a name that hits. There's a whole bunch of other B-sides that are just amazing, stuff like that.
Yeah, and then like the whole record company he started, the Real World, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I just remembered, quick dork note, I'm positive that the drummer on Asia is Steve Gadd.
You can really?
I'll double check.
I'm this is
amazing.
I honestly did not think this show would go into like dorking out of music, but I'm glad.
Yeah, true.
But I guess I should ask, you know, before we kind of get into more, like, what was your musical inspiration? Like, what got you to then? Obviously, you said folk and whatnot, but what got you to sort of going and saying, well, now I can play music? You know, like, what got you to sort of play? Because I listen to music and I can dork on music and I can talk about music, fantastic. But I am not a musician. I have no desire to perform, and that's totally cool.
You can do a great, you know, Michael McDonald impression.
That's about all I can do. I can sing. Now I'm thinking of the words. Fucking What a Fool Believe. Yeah, like I can do that. That's about all I can do. I can do a Michael McDonald impression, and we can.
It's gorgeous.
And we gorgeous. I can do It Keeps You Running, and you know, and we can have
it
that moment.
It keeps you running.
Again, it's just that's that weird voice where you just heard it. It's like I heard it. It's every he was, and this is the last I'll say. Michael McDonald was the background vocals of the 80s, and I don't know why. I don't know why. I just want
to. And the 70s too.
I just want to. Yeah. Yes. And I just want to know why. I'm not even insulting the guy or whatever, because that was like the idea behind it, just like oversaturate the market. I just want to know how that happened. Like, was he just there? Did he like leave a calling card somewhere? Like, how is it that he just magically was in like the background of like, it's like, why was he in the background of Peg? What was he doing
Peg!
Around? It's like, what was he doing? What yeah. was he there recording an album? And they're like, "Hey, do you want to sit back for a backing track?" Like, what? This is happening. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I heard Donald Fagen talk about Michael McDonald once. It sounds like they like sought him out. I mean, take that with a grain of salt, but I feel like they wanted Michael McDonald. But who knows?
I mean, no, and I bet that's a case. And again, I just wondered. Like, I get that he was there, but it's like. That's not the only time he's been a random backing vocal on a random album somewhere, and it wasn't. Yeah. And that was the gag. I mean, I think there is. I almost want to say,
gag.
Well, because I don't remember if it was an SNL sketch or if it was a well, I forget what the Canadian SNL was. Shit.
I'm struggling with that name too.
I can't remember, but there's a sketch somewhere where someone does a Michael McDonald thing where they do that, and you see him like as the David Cross song was like such a long way, to, like he just to, where you see him like running across like Monty Python esque to get to a studio and like put it like to say such a long way to go, and then like takes his stuff off and like you know just smokes a cigarette. I got to find it somewhere because it was
that
like,
sounds amazing.
It's enough where I remember it and that. But yes, what got you into music, sir?
Yeah, so by that, do you mean like influences? Or?
Yeah, let's go with influences. Let's start with that. Like obviously, okay. Something – when you heard something, you know, because we all either – or – and that doesn't have to be necessarily a musician, a big-time musician. It could even be local or whatever. The idea is that you hear somebody play something and you go, I can do that. Because I think that's the ultimate difference between a listener like myself and a musician. Is that a musician will hear it and go, I think I can do that, or I want to do that. And everyone
see,
has
that,
this.
To me, that's the key. Because I think now these days, at least 72% of the time, I feel like that's something I can do. But I didn't feel like that at first, which is probably true for lots of people. You know, like at first I wanted to do it, but I didn't think I could. You know what I mean? Like I think that was like probably a decade it was worth of life, you know, where I was like wanting to make music, but didn't know how to. I mean, influence wise, I mean, some of it is super boring and really expected, Roberto. I'm sure you're going to be able to guess this, but like, big surprise. Beatles, isn't that a shocker?
Again, Beatles is not. That's yes, everyone loves the Beatles, but that's because they're a damn good band and they had a damn good collection of music. It's not like, you know, they went from things to like, you know, Love Me Do and, you know, Twist and Shout to fucking everything off Revolver and the White Album and like my all-time favorite song Come Together, and it's just like you listen to that like catalog of music and you're like, "Yeah, of course. Yeah. This is like, you know, of course you're going to like the Beatles because there's something for everybody in one of these albums. One of these albums means something to you. The White Album, you know, Sgt. Pepper, one of these albums is going to say, oh, shit, that's music. And, you know, it's going to have that moment.
Yes, and for me, the particular – there's sort of three Beatles songs, I think, that for me were just like – you know, like I appreciated music from a really early age, including Gary Wright's Dreamweaver was the first cassette I ever bought, which is an amazing album. All the way through. It truly is. I Can't Find the Judge, Give Me a Break. That's a great song.
No.
But anyway, we digress. The three Beatles songs that really sort of changed my life, and I don't mean that, you know, for dramatic sake. I mean, it's true. I mean, because they made me realize, you know, like, I was enjoying music like this. Like, oh, music can be this. Across the Universe.
Yep.
Happiness is a Warm Gun and Julia were three songs that just utterly exploded my mind, you know, and made me want to make music. They didn't make me think I could.
But that's the thing is that there's always with any musician, there's that spark of listening to something you know, or hearing a performance or doing something. Like for me, when it comes sort of broadcast and doing podcasting, for me, it was Kevin Smith. Not because Kevin Smith is anything I could, you know, quote unquote, be directorial wise, but he started doing this podcast. He did his own podcast where it was him and Scott Moses talking. And I'm like, I could do that. I'm geeky. I'm dorky. I could talk to people about.
And it turns out, by the way, that you can't.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I can do that. I have that ability. And that's what got me to start doing that.
That's awesome.
Sort of that sort of thing. So you have to always, I always believe everybody has that. Musicians are always that weird one, that special one where it's like they hear it and they go, because I'll get that same feeling where I go, I'm listening to music on an entirely different level now. And I'm able to capture sort of things and capture stuff. And I'll you know, talk to musician friends like, go, I'm surprised you caught that. I'm like, cool, I'm glad I did. Because that adds to the ability of being able to talk about music, interview musicians. But yeah, I've never had that desire to do music. And it's like, I know that it's just it's the same, but they go, now I want to do this. Let me see what I can put a spin on. We're almost out of time for this one, but we're almost at your time limit because I know you had to.
Holy crap. Wow, that happened quickly.
I told you at the beginning. I told you the mission, and we've achieved the mission. We should probably start talking about the new album and whatnot because you have one right now on iTunes, and we can all pick it up and buy it. And we all should buy it because buy music's a good thing.
Agreed.
The best way I say to friends, stream to preview, buy if you love it, or buy if you want to support it. I buy enough music off Bandcamp that I think a majority of my music is off like other digital service and whatnot. But
that's really great, man. Good on you.
That's safe. That's what happens when you have friends that make a lot of music. You go like, oh, yeah, I like this. Wonderful. Oh, this is cool. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's interesting. We grab this.
Yeah, that's really wonderful.
But
so the new project, you want to hear about the new, project is, I'll try to make this brief. The new project, the concept was born by a friend of mine who's an archivist. He's an archaeologist, fascinating human being. He's also an adjunct professor, and he's just he's a deep fan of music, and he's he's got a collection of vinyl that is it just boggles the mind. It's largeness, and it's sort of breadth genre wise. So anyway, we've been friends for quite some time, and we will have vinyl listening evenings. And he came up with this idea 2 years ago, and the idea was this: hey, Reed, what if for the following year I send you an MP3 from my gargantuan digital collection by any artist I choose. And by the end of said month, you have to reply to that track in MP3 form, be it a direct cover of it, you sample it, you are inspired by it, you record something with somebody or by yourself, and you send it to me. And we had such a good time doing that for the first year that we decided to do a second. And we liked the products enough that it's like, let's make an album of it. Let's make a sprawling 2-disc set.
That is wow.
So
that
it's been fascinating, Roberto. And it's there is a lot. I mean, to give you just a sample, I've got to look at the list here.
I'm wondering how deep does this rabbit hole go?
It goes deep. So here's some examples: Spaceman 3. There's a Spaceman 3 cover on there. Naked Ray Gun, Mendelssohn.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Bob Pegg, Nick Cave, half Japanese, an amazing artist named Gore Mkhitaryan. So that song, by the way, I had to sing in phonetic Armenian. So that was fascinating. And then the artist heard it.
No.
He said he could actually understand the language. Which is
oh
amazing.
My god, that's got to be the best when the artist, like, I had imagined this would cover, like, when the artist, the original artist was like, "Holy shit, this is awesome!" That's why I'm always believe that's got to be the best feeling from a musician.
Oh, it was amazing. So it's just been so much fun, and there's of course many, many more examples I could give you, but it's just been super fun because it's been like every project, it's a community project, and so everybody I've met, is involved. And so it's just like this endless list of amazing musicians and producers and engineers. And so it's been super fun, and it's been really hard to raise money for it because it always is.
And I think that's why I was curious, especially, for those who do not know, and we'll put a link in the show notes to this, but you've chosen to kind of crowdfund it through GoFundMe, which you've gotten, you're pretty damn close. You're not quite there yet, but
We're
getting there, and that's still an accomplishment to get as close as you had. That's always
Well, thanks. I mean, that and thanks goes, of course, to the This is, I'm not being syrupy and Hallmarky here. It's amazing that people, it's amazing to me that people still give to these projects, especially considering how frickin' saturated, you know,
well,
the internet is.
I mean, we're when it comes to crowdfunding, yes, we've hit a point of saturation, but I think we're now at a point where I think people are realizing how this all works and what this all means. And people are starting to learn what can be crowdfunded, what can't be, and how to approach it. You know, a lot of it, you know, in my sphere of crowdfunding, there's music, movies, or even video games. And I've kind of gotten sort of savvy to how the business works and everything else like that through friends and everything else. But a lot of people still believe that a crowdfunding effort's a pre-order when it's not. And it's sort of explaining up front what it is you're trying to do. When it comes to album, it's like, here's what I'm trying to do. You know, I mean, thankfully with music, thankfully music, it's the hard part of putting an album out, besides writing it, besides making material or all those things. The hard part is if it's digital, it's getting it mastered. It's sending it off to somebody, because again, that costs money. That still costs a good chunk of change to actually get it properly mastered.
Hell
and properly,
yes.
You know, and that's not because it sounds so silly. It sounds so weird to say like, oh, this is expensive. It's because somebody goes and listens to music and says, how can I make this sound the best that it can?
Yeah, totally. It's really great to hear you say that. I mean, because I think people understandably are often baffled, you know, by why it takes so much money, but it's like, it's not only mastering, it's like it also needs to be mixed by somebody separately. And that's also really expensive. And guess what? Musicians need to be paid. You know
And I think that's the important part is understanding these are the things that go, even if all you did was release a digital version, if all you did was put it up on Bandcamp and you want to actually get people to buy it, that's as much as you'd have to do. Then that doesn't even include the other portion, which, because you mentioned you do covers, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize, the idea of, and
the complication.
Welcome to the world of mechanical licenses and what the fuck that means and how you actually license the stuff. And then it comes sampling, and it's like, well, if I sample this, how do I get this license? How do I clear this? Because at the same time, you want to make sure you do something legitimately right too, because you don't want to have someone knock on your door and say, hey, you owe me way more money now. And it's like, and again, it's all these sort of things that a lot of people don't know, because they've just kind of consumed music. They've never gone and said, how do people make this? What is this?
Absolutely.
I mean, half the reason I know half the stuff is just because I got into copyright, and because you kind of do that as a kid when you get into video games and you start getting into streaming. Like, what the fuck is this? What's this music? What's a DMCA? And you start learning about that stuff. I mean, when I was in high school, when the DMCA kind of came about, for good or for bad, depending on where you are on the act itself. I won't go in more detail, but it's also only because, you know, you go that and then you start talking to friends and you make enough friends who've done enough things in music. You start to learn about all these sort of stuff and you realize, like, it is expensive to get something mastered. It is expensive to do it, because somebody has to go about and listen to this and go, what is it that is going to make this sound not just good? You know, and that's not even like, we're not even talking about the composition side of things. Composition's an entirely different beast than mastering and mixing and all these things. I mean, because even if, and you can probably comment on this while because we're literally at time that kind of thing. Last comment kind of thing, but like even like just mixing it for a CD requires you to like adjust a certain way. Then if you were to say, for example, put it on wax as they like put on vinyl, we require an entirely different mixing.
Yeah, they're separate situations with separate price tags. Yeah, absolutely. Totally separate things. And I appreciate you clearly have talked to many a musician in your life, you know, because like you definitely know things. I mean, there's so many other processes, including like paying people to prepare the art for the album. Paying the people to print the frickin' album. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many providing meals for musicians that are coming. You know, it's like there's just so many.
Well, because you try your best to because I think this is what every creative, anyone who is creative, understands this. And I consider myself a creative. I talk with many creatives of different disciplines. I have, you know, many creative friends, that kind of thing. And I think when you are a creative, you want to do your best to make sure you do right by the work of
someone. Hell yeah. Beautifully said, man. Yeah.
Whether that be pay them the right amount, whether it be, even if it's like a favor, even if it's someone says like, I'll give you a solid. It's like, let me at least treat you to a meal. Let me do this. Let me pay for your hotel. Whatever it is, you want to try to do it because you may not be able to, you know, they may be cutting you an amazing deal and you know that they are because they're your friend or you've worked out something else and you know that they're cutting you an amazing deal because you know how much it typically goes for.
Totally.
You know.
But you don't want to take them for granted. Yeah, absolutely. It's the way you don't want to be taken for granted.
Right. Well, because the idea that you want to make sure that, because, and this is sort of my opinion of things, and we'll leave this as the last thought and then we'll head on out.
Okay. I've got one other thing to kind of wedge it in there after
you're
done.
Yes, of course you can. Cool. This is the final thought is that I never know, and I bet you have the same opinion, Reid, is that you never know who it is you're going to interact with or who it is you're going to work with that's going to talk to somebody else or that's going to be that thing that says, hey, you know, I was working with this guy, Reid. He's a really amazing musician. Would you like to work with him, you know, guy from Rolling Stones? You know, whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And you never quite, I don't know why I said guy from Rolling Stones. Like, I don't make jokes. I don't know why the fuck I said it. That was a weird way of saying it. It just occurred to me. But the idea of more or less that, one, because you're a good person, and two, you want to, you know, do right by it. But even the third is that you never know. Like, from my opinion, it's always, I never know who is going to become bigger than me. And that's not even a bad thing. That's just like, I never know. And I don't want to have that like opinion of like, oh, this person might be, you know, do something. But I like to present myself as a kind, caring person and talking to people like that and knowing that, hey, and I've had it before where in this case, right, like here right now, it's because Chris is a friend of ours, my friend.
Yeah.
And I was talking to you about this. Like there's no other reason why we're having this conversation except for that. And that's
blessings to Chris.
Yeah. And that's a weird, and that's an interesting way of looking at the world and sort of understanding. Yeah. I've taken that approach to how to treat people. And especially when it comes to like paying people, like whatever the fair rate is.
Yeah.
And I always open up with anyone that does creative stuff. I go, what's your rate? Not because if it's too much and like, you know, that might be out of my price range and I can declare it because I was like, cool. They understand that. And they're like, totally fine. Cause that's, you should decide what your rate is. That kind of thing. What's your last thing to wedge? Cause we are at your time limit.
Yeah. This has been way too interesting.
The way I say it, the best way I put it, Reid, is that I'll just have to get you back on next time. I'll get you back on.
Yeah, man.
We'll talk about
it. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, the last thing I wanted to say is just that it's been really fun talking with you about this because it's made me, I don't know, talking with a quality human being, you always realize things you wouldn't have if you weren't talking to said human being. So it's just very cool to look at any kind of, you know, often there's sort of like a front person, a person who's like the face of a project, of a fundraising campaign. In this situation, it happens to be me. But the great thing about donating to any sort of project like this is that you're donating to a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like there's a huge cast of characters that you're giving money to, essentially. It's not just the pale Irishman that's on the cover, you know what I mean? which is really great. And I just wanted to say again, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a real joy, and thanks to everybody that has so generously donated to the thing. And
no, for
you
sure.
seem like a quality soul, Roberto.
Well, thank you so much. Like I said, Reid, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Well, Reid, let's say people have been intrigued, have been mesmerized, have been like, you know what, this Reid character seems like a really solid person. I want to give to his project. Where can people, 1A, find you online? More importantly, B, find your music, and how can they help, you know, make the next album come out? In this weird, freaky folk world.
Yeah. So, the place to donate to this new project is GoFundMe.com, and in particular, it's GoFundMe.com. This kind of slash. Yeah, that's the one.
Forward slash, we say.
Yeah, it's tell me I-M wrong. It's a little bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, if you look up on GoFundMe, I wish I had smart enough to kind of made a pre-shot of it. But if you look up, just tell me I'm wrong. I'll GoFundMe, and it's a new Dash new album. And look up Reid McCall. Again, we'll put a link in the show notes so that way you can.
Oh, I so appreciate that.
But just in case for audio listeners who are listening, people watching YouTube type thing after the fact, you want to kind of go, you can go there. And like I said, it's almost there, and it's pretty damn close.
Getting close. Yeah.
I mean, it's enough and, where and it's music, awesome.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And then, you know, if people that want to find other things, the album I made a couple of years ago is on Spotify. It's under my name, Reed McArdle, and it's called Frets. And you can find it on YouTube as well and countless other places.
Yeah, it's also on, just from my point of view, it's also on Apple Music as well. So mm-hmm. You can buy it off iTunes. You can buy it off Spotify. Wherever music is wherever you consume music, chances are you can find it there.
Indeed.
Reed, it was a pleasure having you on. Of course, you can find me.
Dude, so sure.
Totally. Of course, you can find me. I'm at VincentForster4 there in the Twitters and the chat rooms, everywhere else in between. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can go to our website, cosmicradiotv.com/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes, the Twitter account for the show, which is at 8bitlife podcast. And of course, after you've given all the money to Reed and you've made sure the project happens and you look in your pocket and you say, I got $1.50 left over, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and help the show become bigger, better, more awesomer.
Notes
taken. So that is it for today. So until next time, I'm talking to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.